Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired artilleryman, CBS News, visiting Professor Dickinson College, as well as the CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. The story so far is that Mr. Zelensky and Mr. Trump have had many phone calls over these last months since Mr. Trump resumed the presidency, and none of them were reported to have gone well, and we have that incident in the Oval Office that is burned in memory. However, within these last days, Mr. Zelensky has presented a statement that he had a very good phone call with Donald Trump, very good, on Sunday. Now, why that's important is, before that phone call, the information from Washington was that the weapons due for Kyiv that were already in Poland were not to go, were not to be shipped. And that there was reason to believe that the Pentagon believed it needed to hold on to its own weapons because of fill in the blank, and that Ukraine would have to wait its turn. After the phone call between Mr. Zelensky and Mr. Trump, suddenly the weapons flow again, although there's a caveat, the word defensive. Jeff, I recount the events as we have them. There's no further transparency. What have you made of these events as they happen and now in reflection? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, I think it reflects two things. One is this uncertain policy by the Trump administration towards support for Ukraine. That was reflected in there was no formal condemnation of Russia at the end of the NATO summit. There was no reiteration of Ukraine as being inevitably a member of NATO, which had been traditionally in NATO summits in past, and a real concern that Mr. Trump was going to basically throw up his hands and walk away. The second thing is really a process problem, and that is, as you suggest, John, the Pentagon announced this pause in the delivery of weaponry to Ukraine the day before Mr. Trump was scheduled to have a phone conversation with Mr. Putin. It didn't seem to me, John, you'd make a major public concession like that the day before you talked to Putin. And needless to say, in the aftermath, Mr. Trump said the phone call didn't go anywhere, and there was no real progress towards convincing Putin to move towards any type of a ceasefire. And not surprising, because Mr. Putin is reading this as the United States will eventually go away. So we got two problems, John. One is reigniting, as has been done now, the sharing of weapons to Ukraine, uncertain how many, uncertain of the delivery. And the second problem is the whole process of national security seems to be somewhat flawed right now in terms of coordination. But for the moment, at least, Ukraine is receiving weaponry. Finally, John, this whole thing is surprising because it was just announced that the pause was due to a concern about American war stocks. But the Ukrainian weaponry was sourced from government contracts directly to industry and were not coming from Pentagon stocks and were actually distinct from orders for the United States military. So it's not exactly correct to say this was threatening or being drawn from wartime U.S. stocks and was depleting them in a more rapid fashion.
In the meantime, Russia has given us to understand that it is resuming the offensive, but the offensive is not tanks and men scrambling over the top and going into firefights. It's drones and missiles, air defense especially. I remember the statistic last week that the largest attack so far, and it might have been eclipsed already, 500 incoming. 7 out of 8 Iskander missiles got through, and they're destroying infrastructure again. But today, the report is that they were aiming at recruiting centers where people sign up or are signed up. In other words, Russia is now using an air war almost exclusively, and the battlefield is static. Especially when it comes to air defense, that is a new kind of war, to my knowledge. Now, Jeff, the puzzle here, you were trained and with historical facts. I know that. So the historical fact that I hold on to is the generality that air power cannot win a war, that it augments the war, that it can cut off supply lines, that it can damage manufacturing, but not win the war. Is that an accurate memory, or has there been an emendation of that?
No, John, I think that remains an accurate memory. I mean, one only can look at the blitz against the British population by the Germans, which really stiffened, I think, British response. The American air campaigns over Germany, and at the height of that, German war production actually went up. The Japanese would surrender, but that was after the atomic bomb. And even then, the Japanese military wanted to fight on. And of course, we, the United States, dropped more ordnance on North Vietnam than we dropped on Germany in World War II. And it certainly didn't convince the North Vietnamese to surrender. So it seems to me that the history of air power alone breaking the willpower of a population and bringing them to surrender is spotty at best, if not totally false. In the Russian case, you're right, though. They are expanding that. In the month of June, they may have expended as many as 5,000 drones and missiles against targets in Ukraine, breaking records almost on successive nights. And furthermore, they're going so far as to do so-called two-tap strikes, John. A two-tap strike is when you hit a residential area, and then you wait about a half an hour, and you send a weapon, drone, or missile on the same target. Why do you do that? Well, it takes about a half an hour for the firemen, the first responders, the medics, the ambulances to show up. So in reality, what you're doing is trying to target the willpower of the population by destroying those who can care for them if, in fact, they're injured.
Also, the development has led to the revelation that Russia is now using fiber optics for its drones, Jeff. What does that mean?
Well, fiber optics are, in other words, to guide the drone, and they can go as far as 24 miles, I'm told, John. And the reason for this is the Ukrainians have been able to successfully use electronic warfare to break up the signal, if you're doing it just electronically, between the controller and the actual drone. Obviously, you can't interrupt it if it's a cable or a micro, in this case, a fiber optic cable that is guiding the drone. This makes the battlefield very, very static because its battlefield is totally transparent. If it moves, it dies. And within 24 miles of the front, you're really susceptible to drone strikes, whether you're Ukrainian or whether you're Russian. Now, the Russians are continuing to make some very minor progress, particularly down in Luhansk and the Donbas region, but at really very startling casualty levels. But we've already seen as well, to kind of balance that, the Ukrainians making some gains in counteroffensive up near the northern city of Sumy. So in a large degree, in terms of territory gain, the Russians are gaining very little territory at high levels of attrition, so therefore reverting to air power. But I think what Mr. Putin, particularly by what the White House has been doing and the Pentagon has been doing, remains convinced that his willpower is stronger than the West's, and eventually he can sustain these casualties and wait us out until we basically quit this particular war and move away.
Is this a war of attrition? Is that what we now see, Jeff?
I think absolutely, John, this is a war of attrition, because the question also gets back to the economic underpinnings, and that's why support is so important. There's a lot of indicators, and we've been discussing those off of mic, about the Russian economy being in dire circumstances, some suggestion that it's rapidly moving towards a recession. So can they sustain that? They are getting external support. 1 million, we know, 152-millimeter artillery rounds have arrived from North Korea. They're getting certain amounts of technology and spare parts from the Chinese. Obviously, their ability to import Shahed drones from Iran, which they were doing to a large degree, has been circumscribed. But they had begun building factories in Russia to create those particular drones. So they are getting a lot of assistance. And this begs another question from the Trump administration. We know there is large bipartisan support, maybe 80 senators who have come up willing to vote for really draconian sanctions on the Russian Federation, 500% tariffs on any country that buys Russian oil. Think China, think India. But so far, even though that particular proposal is pushed by such people as Lindsey Graham, it's held up being enacted by the president, who is, quote unquote, thinking about it.
I'm speaking to Colonel Jeff McCausin, United States Army, retired, CBS News. We're going to turn to Jeff, who is also a veteran of NATO, and NATO's making remarks about the future that is worrisome. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.